Hey gang, we're back with another bonus episode. I hope you're enjoying these awesome bonus episodes brought to you by great partners of ours around the country. This week, our friends at TTFCA, the Texas Track and Field Coaches Association, along with CoachTube.com, are partnering with us to help bring you another NCAA recruiting bonus episode. Recently, Lamont Vaughn, head coach of Grambling State University, spoke at the virtual clinic for TTFCA back in December, speaking about this important topic. And we all, TTFCA, CoachTube.com, and us, wanted to bring that topic to you to help bring value to your program this year in the upcoming 2024 season. So I hope you enjoy. Please stop by CoachTube.com to see many, thousands, hundreds, great topics on track and field from shot put, javelin, pole vault, and more. You're sure to receive a lot of value there. Let's get on with the show.
Track and field world, you are now tuned in to our humble servant, Mike Cunningham, for another extraordinary message on Gill Athletics Connections.
Alrighty, everybody, I'm here ready for our first session of the day with Lamont Vaughn Jr., head track and field coach at Grambling State University. Go ahead and take it away, coach.
Good evening, everybody. Can everybody see or hear me? I hope everybody can. Sounds like everybody can. So for, you know, this presentation, this is basically the state of track and field recruiting. I know that there's a lot of discussion going on about what's going on with transfer portal and this, that, and the other. We can definitely get any questions that anybody may have regarding the transfer portal. A lot of what I probably will talk about is kind of what goes into the mindset of many coaches, not necessarily all, but many of the coaches at our level. I tell people all the time, track and field, you know, you can talk to five different programs at five different times of the year, and you might get five different answers each time. But I think the big thing for all of us, when we talk about track and field, we talk about recruiting, the big thing for us is always going to be, we're trying to calculate postseason success. Okay. I talk to parents, coaches, athletes all the time. Texas Relays is a phenomenal meet. It's one of the better meets, if not the best invitational meet in the country. It's a great meet, but there's not a single coach at that meet that gets paid for what happens, gets evaluated for what happens at that meet, including the coaches at Texas. I've known Coach Floreal for, almost 20 years. Their distance coach, Greg Metcalf, I worked for him at the University of Washington. They don't get paid for what happens at that meet, okay? They're evaluated. They are some of the highest paid coaches in the country. They're evaluated by what happens at their conference championships, at the regional championships, and at the NCAA championships. That's really bottom line for all of us. Now, we may be doing it at different levels. A Grambling State, my AD is not asking me necessarily what's happening at the NCAA meet, because we're trying to get ourselves to the point where we can get to that. But we are evaluated by what happens at the SWAC championships. And so in order to guide our recruiting, what I've done over the years, and this is my 27th year coaching, what I've done and what I've asked my staff to do is calculate a three-year cohort, so to speak, of what's the average winner of your events that you coach, and what's the average last qualifier for a final or the last performance that scores at our conference championship. That range gives us basically a screen of several things. One, it lets us know how that event is trending in real time. Okay. I know that there's people that do 10-year averages or 15-year averages. So much has changed in the sport in the last 10 to 15 years. I think that three, sometimes maybe even 5 years, is a more accurate snapshot of what's going on. How is that event trending? So for instance, like in our conference in the men's 100, the average winner in our conference the last 3 years has been 10:17 at 100 meters. To make a final, the average has been 10:56. Now, that's a pretty wide range. That's a pretty wide gap. But if you look at what it took to make the final this year, 10:47 didn't make the final this year. So it's telling you, when you look a little bit deeper, okay, our conference at the men's 100 is trending up and it's trending faster. So we now when I'm looking at it, I'm saying, okay, if I look at a young man, I'm saying, okay, how close is that young man's consistent performances? How close is that person to either winning or making a final? Okay. Production always matters at this level. My father coached high school in Tennessee for 32 years. And he would always tell us your production matters, what you do in the classroom, what you do on the track, it matters. And that's either how you're going to get a scholarship, keep your scholarship, or if you're not on a full scholarship or whatever level that you're on, that's how you're going to raise your level of investment. Okay. There's expectation that comes with that level of investment. Okay. The first expectation always is going to be, athletic performance. You got to show up at big meets, the postseason meets, and you got to perform. So that's first and foremost. Second is the academic performance. Okay. The best ability a student can have sometimes is availability. And if they're not available due to academic issues, that's a problem. In my program, it's $1,000 penalty per F up until in eligibility. Once you become ineligible, because of the APR rules now, you have to take it because, you just can't keep taking APR hits left and right. We won't have jobs if we continue to have we don't have any APR issues. But if a coach continues to have APR issues and those things aren't being remedied, that coach is gone. And then the last measure of production that we look at is maturity. We don't need anybody that's in an abusive culture. You can put whatever word you want in front of it. Drug abuse, alcohol abuse, sexual abuse, whatever. We just can't have that. So the production on all three of those fronts, not one of the three, not two of the three, all three. When I worked at UCLA, I had a head coach, Mike Maynard, that I worked for, and he said scholarship is a three-legged stool: academic performance, athletic performance, and your personal maturity. If you take either one of the legs out of away from that stool, you can't sit on it. And so, so that's what we're always looking at. Now, again, those numbers, it's always us calculating probability. Possibilities are endless. I don't concern myself with what's possible. Okay. I concern myself with what's probable. Okay. I had a young man, Jordan Bowes, when I coached at the University of Washington. Jordan Bowes was an 11-1, 22-5 walk-on. That young man increased his probability of success because he did the work. He's a 3.2 student in economics at the University of Washington. That is not easy to do, especially when you major in business, any type of business field at the University of Washington. It's not easy to do. The young man ended up a five-time NCAA All-American. He ran 44.82 in 2037, but he did the work. He did the work. I never had to worry about him drinking and smoking and beating up on the girls and all this other crazy stuff. I never had to worry about him missing a minute of study hall. He was the first one in at practice. He was the last one out. We just had to kick him out the weight room. So those type of young men, there's a space for them, but they're going to have to earn that through their actions. So I tell those type of young men, hey, look, if you're walk-on's not a dirty word, tryout's not a dirty word. If you're walking on, you're trying out, the attitude you need to take is don't make yourself easy to cut. If you're going to be late, if you're not going to do the work, if you're going to be a distraction, with your personality or your social activity, you can go. These kids on scholarship, I can at least write, see what they can do until the end of the year and make some changes. But for a walk on or a tryout, if you're going to get in the way of what we're doing, you got to go. So when we talk about these evaluations, it's hard. It's hard because we get so many kids, so many emails all the time. And you're just looking, you're trying to look deeper and deeper in the signs, but you know, the signs are, it's always leading. Okay, what is the probability of success for this person? That at the end of the day, that's what matters. My coach, Daryl Anderson, used to be the TCU head coach. He's now back at my alma mater at Kentucky as an assistant with the men's sprints. He used to tell us all the time, you are what your top five times say you are. So, you know, the advice that I give coaches is show me what the probability looks like. Okay. Show me the top five performances. Show me the academic record. Show me disciplinary records. Show me what their weight room experience is. Don't show me 4x2 splits or 4x1 splits. I don't need those. Don't show me 40 times. I don't need those. Show me the entire picture of who this young man or who this young woman is and how it helps our program be successful in the postseason. You know, it's just difficult to do that. So by doing that, you know, making it easier by showing us the top five performances or giving us an average of their top five performances the previous season, doing their top five performances over the course of time, that doesn't necessarily show me. I'd rather see, you know, on mile split, what are those top average of the top five in the 2023 season? So I think giving us that snapshot now says, okay, this is where this young man or young woman is. I've said on many occasions, your athletic record, you get the same, almost the same evaluation as your academic record. You can make an A in a class and you've done really well in that class, but you're getting evaluated by your GPA. So a young man can run 10:40, but if his average is 10:60, that's kind of way most coaches are going to look at him. They're going to look at him as a 10:60 guy, not necessarily a 10:40 guy. Now, other things are factors in there too. You know, where are they doing it? Who are they running against? Is the performance wind assisted or not? Those things kind of come into play too. So we try to look a lot deeper than what most people think that we do. But if coaches save us the time, you know, sending us those top five averages, sending us the transcripts right off the top, sending us the NCAID numbers, giving us a picture of the young person, giving us race videos of that, you can send all of that in one email, and that saves that coach a lot of work, and it gives a good snapshot into that. And 9 times out of 10, most coaches will respond back to you when you give that thorough of information. I've never heard a coach, any of my colleagues, say that, you know, well, you know, if somebody sends all that information, oh, that's just too much information. No, if they get the appropriate information that gives them the correct snapshot, they'll take a look at it, and most of us will respond. So that's the best advice I can give when advocating for your athletes in the recruiting process. But you know, again, at the end of the day, the brass tack is production in the postseason. That's literally what it boils down to. My AD is not going to ask me what happens at the Pelican relays at Baton Rouge when we go down for Southern. They're not going to ask me, you know, why didn't we win a dual meet or a quad meet or whatever. They're not going to ask me what happened in Texas relays. They're not going to ask me Mount SAC or Florida relays. It, at the end of the day, when I'm sitting down, when the season is done and we're done with regionals, or if we, you know, matriculate ourselves to the NCAA meet, when I sit down with my AD, the next time I see him, he's going to ask me, you know, how can we get better at the conference championships? If we win a conference championship, he's going to ask me, how can we win another? That's the brass tacks. I mean, we hire staff based off of maximizing point potential, point possibility, point probability in the postseason. You know, I'm not going to hire a coach that can't help us in the postseason, that can't get our athletes ready for the postseason. So we all get evaluated at this level by what happens at the postseason. Are there any questions to any of that? Hello? Anybody? And if you have a question while we're chatting, please feel free to put it in the chat. I can see the chat as well. So feel free to put those questions in there. But if anybody has any verbal questions they want to ask, please feel free to go ahead and chime in. So there being none, I will continue. Let's see. Let me share my screen here. So a lot of people will ask me, you know, coach, you know, you don't have X, Y, and Z on this team. Why can't this kid get a scholarship or what have you? That's usually a pretty good question. The vast majority of that is, you know, I mean, we've got these scholarship limitations. So a lot of coaches have decided, you know, hey, I'm going to focus on this event area. I want to, you know, I've got a sprint background. I'm a half former half miler. I'm a half mile, a quarter miler. I'm a sprint junkie. I'm a Kinesis major. I was coached by Darrell Anna, who I consider one of the best sprint coaches in the country. His best friend, Michael Holloway, is at Florida, is a multiple time national championship coach and Olympic coach, and has all these great athletes. I cut my teeth on those gentlemen there. So I'm a sprint hurdle junkie to the core. So as a head coach, I want to sprint. I want to hurdle. And then I have to decide what my support system is going to be. We are more of a developmental program at Grambling in the distance races. This is comparative to, you know, other conferences in the country. This is not a great distance conference by any stretch of the imagination. Yes, we do want distance runners and we do want effective distance runners, but, you know, there's nobody in our conference that's going to run 3:59 indoors, break 4 minutes for a mile on the men's side. There's no young lady that's going to, you know, run 4:30 or 4:20 in a mile indoors. We just don't have, we don't attract those type of athletes in this conference. And I can say that, you know, we won't ever have any. It's just consistency shows itself. This conference hasn't had anybody like that in a long while. So most of us, we tend to, you know, gravitate to what we feel we're good at. And I think I've been successful, you know, both at a conference level and a national level in the sprints and hurdles. So I'm going to put the money there. And, you know, my next event group that kind of joins right there along with it usually are the jumps. I want long jumpers. I want triple jumpers. I want high jumpers. You know, and then that group that's after that is probably going to be our throwing group. So if you look at our staff, you look at myself as a sprint coach and you look at my staff, I have a jump coach and I have a throws coach. I don't even have a cross country coach right now. That's something that we're hoping to get into here in the, hopefully the next year or so, is bringing in a cross country coach. But when I sat down with my staff, the first thing that I told them is, look, if you want to be a throws based program, find your own program, because this isn't the one. This is the one, you know, program you're on a staff where we're going to sprint and hurt. If you want a junk based program and you want to put all the investment in there, that's just not what we're going to do. You know, so you're going to get X amount of support there. You're going to get X amount of support in distance races. And cross country, we're a developmental program. We don't really put a lot of money into it, for various reasons. Now, if you go over to Stanford, they're a very serious distance program. They tend to gravitate towards cross country and distance racing. They've had a lot of good multi-eventers and throwers. They've had some good jumpers here and there. Sprints is not something that they traditionally have done. They've done well at it, but it's not something that they go all in and put all their chips in. That's their choice. You know, you look at the LSU sprint jump dominated. You look at the Floridas, that Florida has become a little bit more diverse in the last couple of years, having very good, I think their women were third at NCAA cross country. So they're being a little bit more diverse. But at the end of the day, whatever decision that we make as head coaches, it's expected to work in the postseason. You know, so those resources, those decision making, all of that goes into that. Each year it could change. Like right now on the men's side, I'm very short sprint heavy. I'm trying to get more back into the 400 and the 400 hurdles. So this recruiting cycle, I've spent a lot more time at 400 and 400 hurdles. I probably will pick up a 400, 800 guy. On the women's side, I'm very hurdle heavy. I'm very short hurdle heavy. Got some quarter milers. I've got some short sprinters. I'm probably more between the two. Probably more into the short sprints than I am the quarter right now. So I'm putting a lot more emphasis in 400 hurdles. I'm putting a lot more emphasis at 800 in recruiting. So, you know, but that's cyclical. You know, 2 years from now, I may not be looking for a quarter mile. And, you know, right now we've got about five long jumpers that are really, really good on the women's side. So we're not really pressing a lot into the long jump right now. But 4 years from now, we could be going all in. So that's why really it fluctuates the way that it does. It's just what we have and what we have access to in improving our roster. Now, there may be those special circumstances where, hey, look, this is a kid we just can't pass up. We've got to figure out how to get this. So I've always challenged my staff, out-recruit. If I have a young lady that's 11-8 and 100, you know, 11-8 and 100 probably will get you 7th or 8th. But you've got, you know, a 58-foot shot putter, or you've got a 5'10 high jumper that is willing to come here. Hey, that's better than 11-8. We got to go get that one, and we've got to be intentional. So it still fits what we're doing. You know, I've told, you know, people who I've just started discussing cross country and distance races with, if you want big money for an athlete, they need to be somebody that can qualify and, you know, be in that top 75 to 100 in the region with a legitimate chance at being a regional qualifier outdoors within the region. If you want big money for that one athlete. So it's a philosophical thing. And literally, coaches, please don't feel like, you know, you're bothering us if you're asking what our philosophy is for that particular event. Okay. Most of us would rather, you know, answer that question than have people assuming something about our program. Okay. Some coaches are tight to the vest. It just depends on who you're around. And where they are, or what mood you catch them in, or what have you. Which leads me really into, you know, again, we talk about accessibility and availability of the recruits that are willing to come to a particular school for whatever reason, the transfer portal. I know everybody's concerned about the transfer portal and how it's affecting high school athletes. I've tended to lean on, it's just an additional layer. There's several layers to recruiting. You've got your high school recruiting. So you've got your in-state kids, you got your out-of-state kids, you got your regional kids. You know, we get a lot of kids from Texas. We get a lot of kids from Louisiana. I've got kids from Atlanta, got some kids from California. And I've got kids from Chicago. I actually have kids from Michigan and Wisconsin. So our reach is pretty good. It could be better in some areas. We've got some Kenyans. I'm slowly getting out of that for my own reasons in the distance races. I am looking for more domestic distance runners. But that's just a philosophical change that we've made. When I got here, we were more of a distance program. But so you've got that high school, and it's national, it's regional, it's local. Then you've got the junior college level. So that's always a layer that you consider. I tend to shy away from most women in junior college. I've got to see a lot of things from a young lady in junior college. If a young lady has to go to junior college because of academics, I'm concerned about that. And I know a lot of my coaching colleagues are too. Because women tend to mature faster academically than guys do. Women tend to lock in academically more frequently than guys do. So I need to ask some questions a certain level of questions for a junior college female athlete. Guys, I need to do the same thing. You know, if you have to go academically, but there might be a different set of questions that I may ask a guy on why he struggled academically, either before he got to the junior college or while he's at the junior college. There are things that I may ask the coaches that might be a little bit different, just little nuance, nothing major, just little nuance things. What are they seeing maturity wise? So the junior college level, it's been there for a while. Then you got the internationals. You know, I've got three Kenyans on my team. I've got two Jamaicans on my team. I've reached far into Canada. We've signed a young man from Colombia. I've signed some Nigerian. Now the Nigerians, it's been a problem since COVID because the embassies aren't issuing new student visas, and they're so backed up the last couple of years. It's been hard to sign a Nigerian the last couple of years, or actually not even sign them. It's just hard to get them in. And you know, so that international, that's been there for a while. The new layer, yes, is the transfer portal. And right now, the transfer portal, it's not even the transfer portal. College athletics is just, it's all over the place. The COVID babies are starting to kind of go by the wayside now. Those 6-7 year seniors, they're starting to kind of matriculate out now because of the COVID impact. The transfer portal, I tell coaches this all the time, it's not going anywhere. It's not going anywhere. It may change, you know, small little nuanced things, but that transfer portal is not going anywhere. This is the age of student athlete empowerment. And so I'm not going to sit here and complain about the transfer portal. I've got to adjust. I've got to decide, you know, each year, each season, what the transfer portal is going to mean to me and the success of our program. When I took over as the head coach, as I was taking over as the head coach, I did lean on the transfer portal a little bit harder than I probably would have liked. But, you know, we were not a good program when I took over. And I needed to show the kids in this state of Louisiana, I need to show the kids in Texas, the kids in Georgia, the kids wherever, that we could start moving people and getting things going. So we leaned on the transfer portal a little bit. Now we're starting to, we'll see, I'm in Birmingham right now. We'll see how our program performs this year. But I think we've started to kind of turn the corner a little bit. And I'm probably going to lean more heavily into high school this year. Even recently, I thought about bringing some quarter milers in mid-year through the transfer portal. And to be totally honest, I just backed off. I said, you know, I think we need to get a little younger at 400 and develop a good group of young men and young women together and let them matriculate through and use the transfer portal to maybe get somebody who can make a significant impact to take a 4x4 over the top. You know, if I've got, you know, three or four guys that are, you know, fifth, sixth, seventh, eighth place points at a SWAC championships, well, I go get this 46, maybe 45 second guy. Now, all of a sudden, a 306 relay can now turn into a 303 relay. And now if you get into, you know, the regional meet at 303 and, you know, you got four guys fresh, can that 303 relay sneak in and run 301, 302? Maybe, maybe not. But that transfer portal kind of gives you, I'm going to use it to get over the hump as I develop some high school kids. That's my choice right now. Other programs are doing it differently. You know, I don't want to speak for Coach Holloway here, but you know, right now he's the king of the transfer portal right now. But I understand why he's the king of the transfer portal. His AD is expecting him to win the 14th national championship. Yeah, those 46 second guys are great, but man, it's getting to the point where 45-1 is not making an NCAA final anymore. 45-9, 45-7 is not making an SEC final anymore. So he's got to go get those guys that can make those finals and keep keep the status quo going at a national level. And it's Florida. You know, they're running 257 in a 4x4. Why would a quarter miler not want to go there? You know, he's turning guys from 45-second guys at one school to 43-second guys at Florida. They're going to go, and they're going to make a significant impact to Florida's national championship hopes. Those teams that are not national championship quarter, contenders, okay, they've got to do what they need to do for themselves at the conference level or maybe even a national level. Maybe their goal is to be a top 15 team. Maybe their goal is to be a top 25 team. Maybe their goal is to be top three at conference. Maybe their goal is to be top five at conference for wherever they are right now. So it's just a matter of where that program is, what's expected of them, and what philosophy that head coach has. Does anybody have – oh, well, I see a question in the chat. Coach Urban here. Speaking of philosophy, when recruiting a high school prospect, do you tend to communicate with the high school to get an idea of the athlete is a better fit, or do you solely rely on the individual, the athlete, the parent, or the club coach that initiated the contact? Me, personally, I want to talk to everybody. I want to talk to the club coach. I want to talk to the high school coach. I'm always going to talk to high school coaches. I grew up in a family of high school coaches. My dad actually started our high school club, but my dad's passion was the high school. So in respect to his career and what he's done for me, as a father, a coach, and all the above, I'm always wanting to talk to the high school coach. It is frustrating sometimes to see the friction between club coaches and high school coaches. It's frustrating to see the friction that does tend to pop up between parents and high school coaches. When I talk to an athlete about it, these are 17 to 18 year old young people. So when I talk to them about it, I say, okay, this is your career. This is your education. To start making an adult decision, you need to sit down with the adults and say, okay, we need to come to a common consensus here on how me getting better helps me advance and helps my team and helps the club or what have you. How can we come on to one accord? Because, and I'm going to start sounding like my dad here, when the adults aren't connected, the kids are the ones that slip through the cracks. You know, so I want to help coaches, athletes, and parents connect the dots in a community and in an environment around that athlete, to that student athlete, to help them get better. Because a young kid, a 17, 18 year old, sees the people that they care about, you know, not communicating at a high level or arguing or whatever it is. How do they manifest that? Is that manifested negatively into their academics? Is that manifested negatively into their social interactions? Is that manifested negatively into their performance? You know, there's so many ways we can lose a kid, you know, and I think if the adults are the adults, there's so many ways we can reach a kid. But I think we need to get on one accord. So I don't solely rely on any one individual in the environment surrounding a student athlete. I want to talk to whoever. So as I advise an athlete, when I'm talking to an athlete, I always ask them, hey, look, can we get on a call, a Zoom, or whatever with your support system? And I leave it to the athlete to say, okay, who's your support system? You know, I tell them, you know, if it's parent, if it's grandmother, grandmama, you know, granddaddy, aunt, uncle, cousin, whoever you that's on your team, assemble your team. If it's the club coach, if it's the high school coach, I would rather have all of them there, but you tell me what you're comfortable with. Now, I'm going to end up talking to somebody else anyway, but when we're doing this group setting, I want them, the parents, the coaches, club, and high school, to ask questions that a 17 or 18 year old might not know to ask, might not think to ask, might be scared to ask. So sitting down with the adults to help a student athlete make a good decision about what they need to do next, I think is extremely important in empowering these young people to make the best decision for themselves. You know, you guys see it as coaches, the helicopter parent, I call them agents sometimes. They want to negotiate deals. And I've told parents, whose dream is it? Is it yours or the kids? You know, or, oh, the one thing I can't stand. And trust me, a lot of my coaching colleagues at this level, we can't stand it. Using track and field as a backdoor to football or a backdoor to basketball. No, I can't stand that. I can't stand that. I'm not going to spend money on a kid who's only going to be with us maybe one part of the year. And you know, a little known rule, in the first year of residency, if they're on a equivalency scholarship, which is track and field, and they go out for a headcount sport, and I'm giving you NCAA terms here, like football or basketball, in their first year of residency, they have to give up the equivalency scholarship. And that is because of scholarship limitations. You know, your big D1 programs, that's 85 scholarships. So the day somebody even tries out from track and field, they become the 86th scholarship, because for football, it's all or nothing. So that's a violation. And back in the day, there were some of the old school coaches that used to, you know, bully the track coaches or negotiate with the track coaches to hide a football player on track and field money. So the NCAA caught wind of that and got rid of that. But a lot of parents try to negotiate that. I've seen a lot of that lately because, you know, everybody's signing the football signing date. The first one just passed and, you know, kid didn't get offered. So, you know, oh, well, let me see if track will get me. And then I'll just go out football when I get there. That happens a lot. So that's why I want more than just the parent on there, or more than just the athlete, or more than just the club coach. I want the entire community surrounding. I hope that answers your question. But like I said, getting back to that transfer portal topic, ladies and gentlemen, it's really not going to go anywhere. It's not going to go anywhere. This, like I said, this is the age of student athlete empowerment. So you're looking at the NIL. It's not going anywhere. It may change a little bit, but it's not going to go anywhere. So my thing is, we need to get used to it. So we've got to frame ourselves differently. We've got to communicate differently. We've got to meet in the middle differently, have more conversations like this, where we can get questions and answers out, so people know exactly what schools are looking for, what programs, certain programs are looking for. Now with the transfer portal, yes, it is affecting high school athletes, some in the negative, but I don't think it's affecting at the level that people think. So what has happened, especially, okay, so let's look at the power schools, because there's no longer a power five. Let's look at the power schools. So they're looking at the NCAA meet. And if you're talking about, I'm going to stay with the, let's go with the women's 100. You know, in the last 2-3 seasons, you've seen more women break 11 seconds at 100 meters than any other time in the history of this sport at this level. So for your elite programs, that young lady that's running 11.5 or 11, maybe even 11.4, they may not be getting the same looks from the elite programs that they used to get when 11.4 went further. So I think it's affecting those type of student athletes. It's not a flag. To me, it's not affecting the 11.6, 11.8, 11.9 young ladies. I think if it is affecting them, it's affecting them at that power level. So I think those ladies need to now maybe rethink and start looking at schools where 11.6, 11.7, 11.8 go further. You know, and I think that's probably good advice. Now, yeah, it might break your heart. You know, you're not going to be able to get a lot of money at Texas or the Oregons of the world. But, you know, again, you still got that transfer portal. If you go to a school, and because now it on our end, it affects us, not only recruiting high school kids, not only recruiting junior college kids, not only recruiting transfer portal kids, but you got to recruit them when they get here. You still got to keep recruiting because, you know, you get that 11-9 girl and she all of a sudden develops pretty quickly and starts dropping 11-3, 11-2. Yeah, she might want to go to a Texas, an A&M or something like that. Who knows? You know, so those things are available to them. You know, so, you know, college coaches, we got to keep recruiting. Not only, you know, the kids at the levels that we talked about earlier, but we got to recruit our own kids. So, yeah, that's just a change. That's just a change that we have to adjust to. And I think everybody that's, you know, at the high school level, the junior college level, the international level, we all got to make these changes in this sport. So I think we need to make a collective change in how we communicate with each other in this sport. But, you know, that 48-second kid, man, he wasn't going to go to Kentucky on a scholarship anyway. You know, because 48 seconds doesn't fly in the SEC. It just doesn't. It doesn't fly nationally. So he might need to look at an Eastern Kentucky, which is still a very good program. It just may not be the most popular program. So, again, what I'm saying is we've got to empower these student athletes by giving them access to a wider range of programs, if that's the best way that I can state that. Accessibility, communication, this day and age that we're in, there's so many multiple ways to get in contact with somebody. The dinosaurs of the sport that aren't into emails, aren't into text messages, those men and women are starting to retire now. So a lot of us, and I'm getting ready to turn 50, so I'm kind of new school and old school, a little bit of both. I stay engaged on social media. I answer emails. You know, you send me a text message, I'll respond. It may not be the answer you want, but at least I'll respond. So build a relationship with those people who are making contact with you and they are discussing what's going on with their program in relation to your athletes. Continue that dialogue. Reach out to them. You know, there's a lot of things going on now, you know, at this level. You know, and again, talking with my dad and you know, he retired in the late 90s. Early 2000s, you know, the game has changed, you know, that technology boom. He says, son, I don't know how you answer all these emails in a day. I don't know how you answer all these text messages in a day. Well, he didn't have to do it. My generation does. So I have to speak a new language now, and NIL and the transfer portal is just adding to that language, and the NCAA is still figuring it out. I think, you know, they're listening to the coaches, they're listening to the compliance directors and the ADs about some of the issues. And, you know, the NCAA, I think in the next 5 years is going to probably make subtle changes to all of this stuff. You know, I think there's some other things coming down the pipe, at the power level. I don't think conference realignment and movement, I don't think it's done by any stretch of the imagination. So there's going to be a lot of different changes even coming in the next couple of years. So we've got to be ready for those things. But the only way we get ready, ladies and gentlemen, is going to be communication. That's the only way that we're going to be ready for it, is continue to keep communicating. So with that, again, I don't want to talk too much, but, I think we've got 15 minutes left here. Are there any questions that anybody wants to either put into the chat or they want to, you know, jump on the mic and ask? I hope I'm answering questions and helping you guys out. I hope your silence means I'm doing a good job. Hopefully. Gotcha. So, visits. Everybody's different. In visits, junior days and all of those things. If you have the opportunity to go, on official visit, unofficial visit. Now the official visits are limitless now. Oh Lord, that's a change. The old thing used to be the five visits. Now they can go to, and you can only do one visit per school. You can do infinite number of visits to these schools now. I don't know anybody in track and field that's doing that. I know that's more popular in football and basketball, but those guys and those ladies are working with budgets we're not working with in track and field. But if you have the opportunity to go, I believe that the community should go. I believe that the coaches, the parents, the athletes should go. They should all be there if possible. I know everybody's schedules get crazy. You know, we're coaches, so our family time is precious. But if you have the opportunity to go, go. It's a great time to sit down with these programs, with these student athletes that are currently there, and get a screenshot of what the truth is there. You're not going to get the full truth. You're only going to be there a couple hours. Official visit, you're going to be there 48 hours. You're going to spend 16 hours of that time sleeping if you're getting your 8 hours. So you're only going to get a snapshot of the truth. But going to multiple visits now helps you frame questions to the student athlete. What are you seeing? What are you feeling? What other questions do you think that you got answered here that you didn't get answered at the previous visit? So that experience of doing that and writing those questions down and coming prepared with those type of questions, because you know your athletes. You've got some kids that will talk a coach's ear off and ask all the questions. You've got some kids that are on the polar end of that spectrum where they won't say a word, and it takes, you know, 2 months to pull out a full sentence of that kid. Remember, they're still 17, 18 years old. They don't have the maturity and the processing capability that you have as an adult to get to go ahead and ask that question. You know, and the one thing that I think hems us up is, oh, well, you know, that seems like an obvious question. No, it may not be in that situation. Go ahead and ask the question. Even if you don't get the answer you want, you got an answer. And now you can say, okay, well, maybe this isn't the place for you, or maybe this is the place for you, depending on the truth behind that answer. You know, ask follow-up questions. You know, the one thing that we want as college coaches, we want people to feel inspired by, you know, talking with us and visiting with us. We want those things. We want people to be excited to come and see us, excited to come and talk with us. We're feeling your energy too, and we're evaluating these student athletes and the environment that they're in too. So we want to see the energy. We want to, you know, we want to get questions asked. Any coach that doesn't want a question asked of them, I don't know if you really want to go and be under that person's tutelage. You know, because we're going to have, you know, we have questions as coaches, and why shouldn't a coach, a high school coach, or a parent or an athlete have questions? So, yeah, I mean, I want people to leave this campus and leave my presence saying, you know what, I can see myself there. I can see myself working with coach. It's just kind of up to them. But please feel free, go on these visits, ask these questions, get the, and if you can't go, help your student athlete get to the point where they can ask questions. Okay. We've got another question in the chat, Coach Irvin again. Many parents are convinced to purchase a recruiting service for a good amount of money. Aha, we're going to talk. Yeah, this is a good chat. Can you talk about the pros and cons of recruiting services and if college coaches look at emails from a recruiting service? So I'm going to start with that last bit, the emails from a recruiting service. And that may help you answer the first part of it. Most of them get deleted. Most of them. Okay. I don't care what videos you can put on, you know, what music you put on the videos, and a lot of them get creative. You can put all kinds of music on a video. I'm sorry, a young man running 11 flat is not going to get a scholarship. in 100 in this conference. He's just not. Okay. You can put my favorite song on there. He's not getting it. You know, so it's best to go ahead and directly contact the coaches. The recruiting services, to be totally honest, probably are more effective for international recruits because it allows us to process their academic information, you know, all of that. You know, some of these European recruiting services, they'll even let you know what the kid can and can't, you know, how much they can and can't afford at a particular school, or they'll say, you know, can afford $10,000 or something like that. It's probably more effective on the international side than it is the domestic side. I get them all the time, unsolicited, to be telling you. I don't know how they find these emails sometimes. But and then all of a sudden they just nonstop. There's one, I won't name the service. There's one every time I see it, I just delete it. You know, I hate to say this, but it's true. Recruiting services are almost like track and field camps, to be totally honest. I've done track and field camps several times over the course of 27 years. I have never recruited a kid from a track and field camp. Never. I've never signed a kid from a recruiting service, a domestic kid from a recruiting service. Never in 27 years. Never. Never. And of the 27 years, 24 of them have been at the college level. I have never signed a kid, a domestic kid from a recruiting service. And I'm not saying that doesn't happen. In my experience, it hasn't happened. You know, I can open them every now and then, but consistency says probably not. It, for example, a young lady in the hurdles is, let's say she's running 13.9 in 100 hurdles. What does she need a recruiting service for? She's running 13.9. In the vast majority of mid-major conferences and HBCU conferences, 13.9 is at least going to be in the top 6 or 7. You know, it may not, you know, and here's the thing, 13.9, again, it's just like the transfer portal and all of that. 13.9 is not going to make an SEC final. So the SEC is not looking for that 13.9. You know, I've got a young lady right now. She's a defending conference champion in 100 hurdles. She ran 13.92 in high school. I got her because I knew her high school coach. And I shot my shot, and I got her. But a recruiting service wasn't going to jazz that up anymore. I got the same information from a high school coach that I got from a recruiting service. I got the high school transcripts. I got the NCAA ID number. I got her weight room experience. I trusted him because I knew he was a really good coach. So he knows me. So he was able to, you know, kind of articulate who she was and, you know, to me, and he was able to articulate who I am to her. So yeah. And she didn't spend a dime on that. I don't even know how much these recruiting services cost. And then, you know, I actually recently in the last couple of years, or well, last couple of weeks, had a conversation with one recruiting service because they put out these recruiting standards for us, but never had a conversation with me or anybody on my staff. So their stuff was completely inaccurate. But when I had a conversation with them, they based it off some algorithm that they had of what we had on our roster. And I told them, I said, well, it's best to look at what the conference is, like I told you guys. So yeah, I don't, so some can cost thousands depending on the package. No, it's not worth that. Oh, geez, no, it's not worth that. It is not worth thousands of dollars. And here's what a track coach is going to say. If you got a 1040 kid that can afford thousands of dollars on a recruiting service, if you can afford that, then I don't have to give you super big money because you just spent a lot of your scholarship on the recruiting service. If you can continuously do that, no, oh God, no, no. Do not tell a single parent to spend thousands of dollars on a recruiting service in a sport where the truth doesn't lie. You know, the numbers don't lie. You know, it football, I love football. Football was my first love. You can rush for 1,000 yards in the conference, and you're a very good running back in the SWAC. That's not the same as rushing for 1,000 yards against Alabama, Georgia, Florida, and Auburn, and Texas A&M, and all these other as great. It's not the same. It's just not the same. You can average 20 points a game in basketball in our conference. You're a very good scorer in our conference. That's not the same as playing against North Carolina and Kentucky and Duke every week. It's just not the same. But 10 flat flies at LSU just like it flies at Grambling. You know, 13 flat in the women's hurdles flies here just as flies like it flies at Louisiana Tech. Like, the sport doesn't lie. So, no, trust me. If you have an interest and you have the performances, the consistent performances that's going to show your probability of success at that conference, either they'll find you or they'll listen to you if you send an email or a text message. So pay your cell phone bill, and you know, you're just as good as paying for that recruiting service. It does the same thing. So I don't see that value in, I don't see the return on that investment. You know, that 11 flat kid is paying thousands of dollars to get told no when the answer was already no. You're not going to get a scholarship. You're going to have to try out. You're going to have to walk on, what have you. That's a waste of money. That is an entire waste of money. That breaks my heart to know that they're paying that much. If you were paying $10, $15, maybe that makes sense. You know, because maybe they can take all your information and contact more people quicker for you. I could see that being worth it. But thousands? No, you're getting fleeced. No. Any other questions? How much time do we have?
Right up against it, Coach. Whenever you're I don't see any new questions. So
what I'm going to do right now is I'm going to type a message here. I'm going to put my email and my cell number in the chat. That's my email. If y'all can see that, I hope y'all can see that. This is my cell phone number. If I don't pick up, it's because I'm doing something. So leave me a message and I will always return your email or your call. Other than that, I'm good. But if anybody wants to chat outside of that, feel free to contact me on those two entities there. Thank you for your time.
The goals to appreciate the coach, the ones who point people most. Every season needs a voice of reason, speaking the growth. Got a bat for you, carry the load. It's coffee to the soul for those of us who stay on the go. Proper handoff to stay in the zone. What you packing for the road? There's more than one way to the goal. Take notes, that's paying your toll. It ain't practice if your purpose ain't clear. It can't happen till you listen with both ears. You can't mentor without a mentor's years of experience. You can reinvent those years. Every plan's got a standard to live up to. And the price sacrifice, can you give up you? It's a choice and a fight, not a win or lose. It's not a ploy, but advice so y'all can make more moves. It's not about how to, it's all about why. You don't know till you know who you are inside. 6 million ways to tie, choose none. So we all cross the finish line, the work ain't done. So we learn from the experts, we all gotta put in the legwork. Gil Athletics is a network, it's all about connections. Put together for the profession, so every track coach can be blessed.